Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Karen Can Radio Show. The intention of this show is to empower and inspire you to manifest the life of your dreams, whether it's radiant health, prosperity, loving relationships, or simply peace of mind. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Can, the best-selling author of Guide to Healing Chronic Pain, A Holistic Approach. Well, today I have with me CJ Hunt. He is the filmmaker of a brand new film called In Search of the Perfect Human Diet. And my partner James and I just watched this a couple of days ago, and James said to tell CJ that he was very inspired by the film and he really loved it, and he's going to really try to stop eating sugar.
Well, how nice.
Yeah, so the doctor telling him is not going to really do anything since I'm the significant other, but, you know, somebody else telling him is like, woohoo. So we absolutely love the film. It's so well done. And I'm going to let CJ, you know, welcome, tell us his story about what happened to him in his 20s and his journey, all the different kind of diets he's tried to get to this point to make this amazing documentary about the search for the perfect human diet. So welcome, CJ, to the show.
Well, thanks, Dr. Karen. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on. So, well, my story is when I was 24 years old, I was a dirt bike racer down in San Diego, California, and I went jogging one day to go training in Memorial Day 1978, went a lap and a half and dropped dead. Luckily, an anesthesiologist showed up in the next few minutes and kept me going until the paramedics got there, and then when the paramedics got there, they pulled out the defib paddles and jump-started me and transported me to UCLA Medical Center, where I spent 10 days in intensive care. And at that time, this was 1978, so it's ancient history to a lot of your listeners probably, but they didn't have the technology to really determine what was wrong. And in over the course of time, I found out that I have a heart birth defect, and that has electrical issues and things like that. And it just showed up that day, and luckily there was that anesthesiologist around, or else I'd be out pushing daisies. So I was really lucky. Now, that, of course, at 24, you think you're invincible. And it was quite a wake-up call. And I got a huge interest in health and wellness, of course, and first for myself. And then later, when I got into broadcasting and television news, I was watching this, you know, everybody else's health crises and the obesity epidemic going out of control, and thought, well, you know, maybe you ought to take this on the professional side and see if we could discover anything new that other people hadn't discovered. And that's what started the genesis of looking into developing what is now the film, In Search of the Perfect Human Diet.
Wow. So that's been quite a journey. And in the film, you mentioned about, trying to, you're having this quest of healing your body and, you know, eating proper nutrition, which you intuitively knew that you had to do. So what kinds of diets were you led to either by your doctors? And then, you know, how did that change over time?
Well, actually, I took a lot of it on myself because my doctors at UCLA, because I insisted on exercising and whatnot, kicked me out of the program because I was too much of an independent thinker. Oh, yes, such a rebel. You know what? You're not going to do exactly as we say. You're gone. So, in fact, when I would go running, my mother would follow me in the car because there were no cell phones in those days, you know, and
oh,
I figured
God.
If I made it first. Oh, yeah. I figured if I made it through the first 3 minutes, I was going to be okay. So, in my youthful enthusiasm. But you're right. I got a big interest in health and wellness. And so I went to the local metaphysical bookstore and read everything I could about every kind of diet, whether it's veganism, vegetarianism, fasting, raw foodism, fruitarianism, all of that, and experimented with all of those. I was a raw food vegan for over 5 years. I ate nothing but fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, and sprouts.
Wow.
And, yeah, and, you know, I got lots of comments back then about, wow, you look awfully good for a vegan or a vegetarian, and because I continued to exercise to capacity and those kinds of things. And that seemed to be serving me well, you know, until I had too many life stressors and I'd been doing it long enough. And then you're right, I had this kind of intuitive voice finally say, you know, eat fish. You know,
really?
You need some real, oh yeah, you need some real protein. I mean, the real crisis moment for me that was that change, that defining moment, if as Oprah would say, would be my mother was killed by a drunk driver, and we were best pals ever since I was a little boy. And I just wasn't recovering from that, from the shock and the trauma and the upset of that accident, and literally something inside said, eat protein, you know, because I was,
wow,
was not able to pull myself out of the depression. I was not able to get over the physical impact, you know. And of course, you know, as you and maybe your listeners might know, if they've had been through a big traumatic experience, you know, I couldn't eat for a week. I lost over 20 pounds in 4 days. You know, they're huge stressors that you go through. And if you don't have the right nutritional support to come back from that, you're just going to cascade into a world of other problems, at least in my experience. And, yeah, so you're right. I experimented with a lot of different things and then ultimately found that personal inner voice saying, hey, you need to eat some real protein here. And so I pursued that, and I felt much better, you know, almost instantly.
Really?
And,
that quickly?
Oh, within days, I started feeling better. I gained 8 pounds of muscle within the
wow.
next couple of months. I know, it was shocking. Well, I had originally been about 182. When I was a raw food vegan, I got down to about 162 at the lowest. I was, you know, very thin for me, and although I seemingly healthy. And as soon as I started eating fish again, and that's how I started, because I thought it was easier to digest and whatnot, mm-hmm. You know, and then eventually added back other meats as well. Along, and I continued to eat lots of raw fruits and vegetables and healthy things the best I could get. And but yeah, it was pretty shocking. Within a couple of months, I gained 8 pounds of muscle back, and I thought, well, that's interesting.
Well, you look great in your film. You look just strong and trim, and I think most people would just love to look like that.
Well, thank you so much. I think what's interesting is that's me now. When we shot those stand-ups and things that you saw in the film, I was 57 and 58. I just turned 59. And mind you, because of my heart issue, which got worse in 2000, I now have a pacemaker defibrillator. I'm on my third one, and I am not able to exercise very much yet. Because of these dietary principles that I discovered in the course of searching for the perfect human diet, it's allowed me to keep a normal body weight, and all my blood work looks, you know, fantastic. So all the other markers that I can control of my health by eating in this fashion all look great. And thank you so much for the compliment.
Yes, so, you're welcome. Okay. Well, you know, I think some people will say, well, gee, I read a study that said that vegetarians live longer, and then another person says, well, you know, there's some other data, you know, out of such and such a university that said, and this is more recent, I'm sure you know which one I'm talking about, you know, will eating red meat kill you, because, you know, the more people ate red meat, the more people died in this particular, you know, study, which pulled from many different other studies. And in your film, In Search of the Perfect Human Diet, you talk about, you know, short-term studies versus the biggest, longest study known to man on the human diet. So can you elaborate on what you mean by that?
Well, sure. You know, David Gutoff at the Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation in San Diego actually coined the term, well, the longest human study ever done is the history of the world, you know, in the history of human the history of human evolution and human history. And when you turn to that and see what it is that made us the strongest and most successful species on the planet, that's where you can get most likely find your most favorable or your most accurate information, because if we hadn't been following those principles, we wouldn't be here. I think that's one of the most interesting things that happened. I'm sitting in the dig site of Jean Zoc in France, speaking to one of the anthropologists there. And I said, well, Neanderthals and humans from the period, the bones that they were digging up there, well, were they healthy? And she said, well, if they were not healthy, we wouldn't be here. So I thought, well, that makes sense.
Right.
You know, and yeah, and that's the thing. What happens often in our world today, and at least in America, in our media, is that there's a predisposition towards a certain belief system, and people will go out and they'll scrounge up whatever information they can that'll support that belief system. In fact, you may recall Barry Sears says in the beginning of our film that nutrition is like religion and politics. It's very visceral, you know, and that people will often say, don't bother me with the facts, because in my heart, I know what's right. and some of the studies and things like the China study and whatnot that are observational studies, or they dig through reports, those things are usually set up to create hypotheses. And then you go and create a real study that goes after those hypotheses to prove them or disprove them. And now I think what's interesting where we differ is that I tripped upon, quite accidentally, I did not expect this, this new radioactive bioanalysis that has been developed over the last few years at the Max Planck Institute in Leipzig, Germany. And now you can take human bones and Neanderthal bones and animal bones from all over the world at different periods, and they can tell you exactly what they ate. That it's no longer theoretical, it's no longer hypotheses, and it's no longer speculation, is that these are facts. And, you know, that was the unexpected breakthrough, is that we now have information that was previously unknowable. And many of the sources that you were mentioning, you know, or current media, they don't know this. So they keep regurgitating the same old stuff that, you know, we've heard over and over again. And like all understanding and all knowledge, that, you know, it evolves. It changes once we have more information. But not everyone has the same information, and not everybody wants to believe the new information. So it takes time. In fact, Max Planck asked when he was alive how science advances, he said funerals.
Oh, that's so true.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm not really a biblical scholar, but as I recall, you know, they had to wait 40 years to get into the land of milk and honey, right? They had to wait till the old belief system died off, and the people that didn't have those ways of thinking could then enter into this new place. And it's the same in our world now. A lot of people are very, you know, they're very set in their ways, and they want to believe what they want to believe. And it doesn't. And I think if we step back away from that and try to distance ourselves from our emotional side for a moment, that there is an opportunity to learn something new and then have all the information from which to make your own personal decisions from, you know, all the most recent and hard science versus theoretical science.
Well, I think it's great that you're the one that made this film, because, you know, you have, you know, been and experienced all, you know, many, many different other diets. Like I said, the veganism and the vegetarianism, and you have, you know, this perspective of having, you know, done your own research, felt how it feels in your physical body, how well you did until you had some major stressors in your life. And so I think it's much more believable coming from you than, say, coming from even me, because, you know, although I kind of tried vegetarianism for a short period of time, I gained weight and felt so crappy that it didn't last very long for me. I just couldn't pull the nutrients out of the food. I mean, I was eating all the time, and my blood sugar was up and down and up and down and up and down, and I always had to have something in my purse. And now that I'm eating more the ancient or ancestral diet that you talk about in the film, more paleolithically, with, you know, fats and, you know, saturated fat from meat and vegetables, and not so much on the sweets and the fruit, and certainly almost no grains, that my blood sugar is very even now. I can eat 3 solid meals a day. I don't have to snack in between. And in fact, I don't actually carry food in my purse anymore for emergencies. So, like I said,
I understand. Well, and I did the same thing. I literally carried around a 25-pound case of organic apples and a big bag of almonds in my car when I was a raw food vegan, so that I could eat whenever I was hungry. And you're right, you have to graze. You have to feed all the time. But human beings are not herbivores. We aren't supposed to be grazing all the time. So, I mean, that's just another clue. I would like to bring up a distinction, though, that might be interesting to your audience, is that the whole idea of the Paleolithic diet and the paleo diet. I was recently speaking with Dr. Lane Sebring, who is the medical expert that we visit with at the end of the film.
And
he said, well, you know,
by the way.
Oh, he does, doesn't he? You know,
yeah, he looks awesome. Fit, trim, it's amazing.
Yeah, I know. And he's almost as old as I am. You know, I think he's like a year younger or something. But
okay.
He says, you know, the paleo diet now, it's become so popular and really taken off. But the thing that's adding confusion to the whole area is that people like to try to squeeze their favorite foods into what they are now redefining as paleo.
Mm-hmm.
And and that can include, you know, dairy or grains or tubers and things like that, which are not really the foods that were consumed during, quotes unquote, the Paleolithic period. That those would be more in the ancestral dietary realm, or like with Mark Sisson when he talks about primal diet, where there's addition of other foods that are from the agricultural period forward. So that's why in the film I like to call them, and I got this from Dr. Sebring, human foods and non-human foods. And that is really the simplest distinction, is that there are foods that are unequivocally, I can't believe I got that out, that word, human foods, and the foods that we evolved and, again, became the dominant species on the planet. And then after that, you know, we developed the agriculture and we started, you know, tinkering, as Rob Wolf would say. And of course, we've paid a price for doing that. So Boyd Eaton, who inspired Lauren Cordain, some of your listeners may know these names, basically calls what most people are doing in the paleo world now paleo light. Yeah, paleo-esque. There you go. And it's, you know, and you just got to bring a smile to your face, and it's not beating anybody up on how they want to experiment or try different things in their diet or what level they're comfortable at. It's just from a scientific standpoint, the definition is really clear and is really easy. But that doesn't mean, you know, that's not beating anybody up about it. It's just, well, there are human foods and there are non-human foods. There are ancestral foods, and most of what we think as paleo, it really falls into the ancestral primal diet idea.
Mm.
Is that helpful?
Well, absolutely. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for making that distinction and for pointing that out, because some people, including myself, can be very literal or, you know, this is right, this is wrong. And so I think it's one of my favorite parts of the film when you and Dr. Sebring go into the grocery store and you teach people what is human food and what is not human food. I mean, that section was done so well with the graphics. And, you know, I noticed that you guys were very politically correct to kind of like blur out the name brands, hence, you know, not getting into trouble with any major food corporations. James, of course, my partner, was having a lot of fun guessing the names of the cereal boxes behind you
in the different brands
in the film. Yeah, he goes, "Oh, I've eaten all those." You know, he's naming every one of them because he knows the color scheme. But I thought that was excellent.
Sure.
And even that little piece, you know, I wish, you know, I could just have every single one of my patients, just even if they weren't going to watch the whole film, like, just watch that part, please, because, I mean, that is so, so valuable. So that was a great way that you guys did that teaching. It was wonderful. And people noticed, you know, like, wow, you're really walking on the outside aisles, not the inside aisles, when you're picking out human food. Really?
Oh, yeah,
because you know?
That's where most of them reside. Yeah, it's you often hear that that's the best place to way to shop is go around the outside of, because you'll go through the fresh fruits and vegetables, and you go through the, you know, you'll go to the meat and fish department and the poultry department, and for people that manage to tolerate dairy, the dairy department as well is on the outside usually because they're refrigerated section, and then the only thing that you in most stores that you find in the inner aisles that's still fresh are the nuts and seeds and things like that if they're not already in the vegetable department. So, yeah, it was fun doing that with Dr. Sebring. And that was, I mean, and that was a critical thing to do, I thought, because I wanted people to be able to walk away from the film and have some practical idea of what these discoveries meant. You know, and just, yeah, like I said, well, if these things are true, if this way of eating is the perfect human diet, well, how do we do that? And at least give a small introduction on what that would look like from someone who actually had a medical practice and had, in fact, Dr. Sebring is the original physician in the United States to incorporate these evolutionary nutrition principles into his practice. So it's been about 13 or 14 years now. So he was the first in the medical practice, to the best of my knowledge, and from what Dr. Cordain and others are saying. And there was also a fellow in Australia and another fellow in England. They all kind of picked up on it at the same time. But Dr. Sebring was a great source, and he's very knowledgeable, and he has a good way of explaining things. So really simple, down to earth. And yeah, and I hope, and I've gotten a lot of feedback, as you say, that people have found that section particularly helpful.
Oh, absolutely. And when he was, like you're right, he made it very, very simple for his patients, and I hope to emulate him in that. And I was very inspired by, his application of this in Native people. And I'm originally from Canada, and so I've been to some of the more remote areas where the Native population are incredibly obese and have lots of type 2 diabetes, and just seeing how bringing back the ancestral diets of the culture, the fish, and I mean, it was very actually high fat in this case, but quality fat from fresh caught fish, and just looking at that spread, it was wonderful. I was like, oh, I want to be there to eat that. That looks really, really good.
Oh yeah.
And then
yes,
getting
it was
away
interesting.
From all the artificial stuff.
Yeah, it was fascinating. I mean, most of the people that I met in this film, I had never expected to meet. I was going to go talk to Dr. Cordain. I was going to talk to Dr. Michael Eads, who wrote Protein Power. But at the end of the first interview, Lauren Cordain was the first person I talked to at the football field sequence that you might recall from the movie.
Oh, I love that, too.
When we were done, he said, well, you know who you need to go talk to? And he referred me to Mike Richards at the Max Planck Institute in Leipzig, Germany, and of course they sent me to the south of France first to go to the dig site, all of that kind of thing. In the same way, I was referred to Dr. Jay Wortman in Canada, to the First Nations people of Canada, which up in the Namgis Valley, which is on the west coast of Canada. And it was fascinating. They're having terrible problems with obesity and diabetes, and Dr. Wortman went in and did an official study via the Canadian National Health, where they put people on an Atkins-esque type diet, which was an easy way for them to understand eating closer to their ancestral diet. And they improved remarkably. And one of the most interesting things is that they had this stuff that they ate called that they call grease.
Grease.
Oil. It looks like olive oil, and it is made from ooligan fish, which are candlefish, and they're an oily, smelt-like fish that's something looks like sardines. But what was fascinating is that for centuries, and that the native people of that area, what they would do is they would capture these fish when they ran up the river, a couple of times a year, and they created this way of processing them. They would bury them in the ground, they would ferment, and after they'd fermented, they put them into big vats and they'd boil them for a week or two and stirring them constantly. And what that would do is it would separate all the flesh and bones and things and from the oil, and they would draw off the oil, and that oil was something that they could bury and would store and would not go bad. And it became a big part of their diet, sometimes 50-60% of their diet. They would eat it with all of their meals, and it became so valuable in that part of the world that it was even used as money when the white traders first went through there and discovered this as well. But they were remarkably healthy, and that ooligan oil, that ooligan fish oil, that grease, when tested in a lipids lab in Minnesota, looks like human body fat, and according to Steve Finney and Dr. Wortman, and that it's utilized by humans in the same way that our own stored body fat is, and it is remarkably healthy. So, but it's just fascinating that they created this over thousands of years, just intuitively. And you're right, it makes a huge difference returning to those basic dietary principles. And up there, they have all sorts of salmon and bear and seal and elk and wild animals and very little plant foods. They would eat berries in the summer and a few wild greens, but other than that, it was all animal proteins and this ooligan oil, this or grease.
Yeah, the fat. Yeah. So in the film, says eating fat doesn't make you fat. Eating grains makes you fat. We got out of it, and I think that's very true. And I, being from a conventional medical educational background, we were taught what every doctor was taught in my generation, which was low-fat diet, Dean Ornish, and I really have, great respect for Dean. But we were taught this from the get-go, and I just assumed that there was evidence for it. And I was kind of mad, actually, when I found out that it was really a political thing that, 100 years prior that, they told people to stop eating pastries and bread because of Dr. Banting's research. And then through some political strings and different people in political offices that they started changing to this low-fat diet because it was a theory, but it wasn't actually proven. And then now we're proving that it's very, very, very wrong.
Yeah, I know, and it's taking a long time to get into the public arena. I mean, finally, Dr. Oz and folks are approaching it kind of gingerly, and getting the information out there. But it's going to take a while because there's a lot of vested interests in keeping things the way they are. Whether it's cholesterol medicines, and in fact, I also belong to the veterans side of medical, and when you go in, if your blood values are within certain ranges, they automatically try to put you on statins. They never, without looking at diet or anything else. And if you try to say, well, the way we measure this isn't really accurate, they don't want to hear it. Yes. So you're right. It's eventually that message will get out, but there's a lot of resistance, just like there's a predisposition in the media to believe in vegetarianism and veganism and eating a plant-based diet that is not based on hard scientific proof. It's, an emotional issue. And again, to look at something that's contrary to their current belief system is hard to get them to do.
Absolutely. And I I've watched several, films. I think you flashed some of them on your in your movies, such as Fork Over Knives and so on and so forth. And I mean, obviously, eating a variety of plant is much, much healthier than eating boxed cereal and hamburger buns and, you know, aspartame and all that kind of stuff. I just, you know, don't think anybody's done, you know, a prospective study as opposed to an observational study, a prospective study of people eating, you know, grass-fed, you know, meat and, you know, more like the human diet, Paleolithic diet versus vegetarianism, and then measured that for over 5 years to see if it, is everyone just as, you know, fertile, or five generations, sorry, not 5 years, is everyone just as fertile, you know, what's the level of chronic disease like, and no one's ever done that study, and I don't think it's really possible or economically feasible to do it, but it'd be pretty interesting. That'd be the closest.
Well, sure, and how do you get anybody's spent? Well, sure, and how, in this day and age, how do you get anybody's family for five generations to eat a certain way?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, evolution and our world used to, you know, that was the only way you could do it, is when you walked out your front door, whatever was around you in your local environment, that was your grocery store. And those were your choices. And if you made good choices, you were successful and your kids lived, you know, and their kids lived. But now we're able to circumvent the natural survival of the fittest. And, you know, so that's, it's going to be tricky. Someone's really going to have to be dedicated. But, you know, kids, if your parents want you to eat a certain way at some point or another, the kids are going to go, forget that, you know, mm-hmm. and go out and try their own thing until they maybe make themselves so sick they go, well, maybe dad and mom knew something.
Do right. After exactly. All. Exactly. Well, I updated, you know, the print version of my book, Guide to Healing Chronic Pain, is going to come out in a few months, and I actually added a section in there promoting your film, because I think it's a very, very important film, and so easy, you know, for people to really get what you're saying without necessarily having to read tomes of nutritional books. Do you have any last, you know, any last words for our listeners, you know, advice, thing, you know, or projects that you're working on, or how to connect with you?
Well, sure. I mean, certainly they're welcome. If they go to the website, there are some email links there, depending on what their interest is, whether they have questions or they want to share their stories, or if they're interested in public relations or those kinds of things, and they can contact us through perfecthumandiet.us. And also the Facebook page, if they'd like to follow there, because there'll be updates. Because there's been so many requests, there will be a companion book coming out. The whole, you know, maybe by Christmas time, because it's a little busy right now. But it'll be based on it'll be based on the transcripts, so people will get all the good information from the experts, and the quotes unquote how to parts will be based on Dr. Sebring's material, because I'm a reporter. You know, I'm not a diet guru, as Rob would say, and I'm just trying to share information from these really great sources that I managed to meet during the course of the filming. So that's one thing. And then the other thing, which actually you are the first to hear publicly, is on April 1st, the film has done so well on video on demand, that's iTunes and Amazon and all that kind of stuff, that In Demand, which is the largest cable system in the United States and Canada, four major cable systems, Time Warner, Comcast, those kinds of things, has decided to pick up the film. And it will be released and launched on April 1st to over 30 million new homes. So that's fun. Yes, that's very fun news.
Congratulations.
Of course, well, thanks. Of course, we still have to figure out how to tell people it's there. But it'll be there, and if they search by name, certainly. And in the VOD world, it's called The Perfect Human Diet, because on video on demand, you know, there's only so many characters they can get up on television or online.
Oh, right.
So the film has been renamed The Perfect Human Diet because of all the video on demand and
okay.
And cable.
And then future Netflix, possibly?
Yeah. All of these, the distributor tells me, and the way it works with film usually, is that there are different distribution platforms in Windows, and like the video on demand is window number one, and then later it goes to subscription services like Netflix and whatnot, and that's another separate window. So once it's kind of had its life in the video on demand world, then it will move on to the subscription services and things like that. So, and then also we're working on getting some new languages out very soon. And if they'll watch Facebook, and I'll tweet about it as well, is that we're going to add Spanish language subtitles and Brazilian Portuguese and maybe some others. The others are in discussion. So those should be up within the next month or so, and I'll put it out there because there have been a lot of requests from Latin America, from Mexico and Latin America for the film, and then, of course, Spanish languages in the United States. Folks, that will become available here in the United States and Canada. And that's exciting news that's on the horizon, and will be coming up very, very, very soon.
Okay, perfect.
That's it as far as the project is concerned. I'm really grateful for all the positive feedback and reviews. If your viewers do watch the show, if they'd be kind enough to comment, I'm learning in the video on demand world, it's important to ask people to put up a little review or rate the stars or comment, because as you know, lots of people will also say bad things about you, even if they haven't seen it. because the new poster has a piece of steak on a fork on it, you know, so, and that upsets a lot of people.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a little too in your face. And let me also tell you that's not to say be anti-vegetarian. That's featuring the discovery that we didn't expect, is that this was the unknowable, that animal proteins and fats are irreplaceable in an optimal human diet. I guess that's the main thing I'd like to say to your audience. They're irreplaceable. If you're going to be a vegan or a vegetarian, you have to do supplementation if you're going to try to stay healthy. You know, you have to take B12. You have to get essential fats that are not in plants, that are important for humans, you know, it's not about cruelty. It's about understanding. You know, if you're a nutritional vegetarian, there are things you really need to do. If you just are into harmlessness, then, well, I don't know. One of my friends said to me the other day is, well, we should also be kind to humans. You know, we should be kind to our own species just as much as any other species.
True.
You know, it's important to know this stuff, and then you can, of course, decide for yourself.
Well, that's perfect, and I'd love it. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's really it. It's that... Here's we have now know things that were unknowable, and it's like I said, it's not anti-vegetarian, it's pro-information, you know, and then you can, you know, live the life that you want to live, and hopefully the healthiest and happiest life that you can attain.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time, CJ, and you know, we'll be sending out emails out to all of our list, making sure that they can connect with you and either see the video on demand or buy the DVD like I did for my own home library and also my office library. So perfecthumandiet.us for those of us in the United States. Again, thank you so much, and we're looking forward to your next film.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Karen. You'll be the first to know. You know,
yay!
Once this thing has it, yay! Once this thing has enough legs, then we can, you know, work on doing some more things. Because there have been a lot of requests. There's a lot of opportunity, I think, to help. Because, you know, a picture tells 1,000 words. And a lot, as you say, a lot of times this is a better way for a lot of people to get information. And then you can see for yourself. It's that kind of a journey. You know, we take you all over the world, you see for yourself, and then you can make up your mind, you know.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And you don't have to...
Cool choice.
Exactly. And you don't always have to read 600 pages to get there.
Right. Exactly. Great. And for everyone listening to the show, thank you for being part of our day here. And whether you're listening live or listening to the archive, bless you. Thank you so much again, CJ. Bye for now.
You bet, Doctor. Thanks.